NFL's off day means after hours here on 96.5. The Fan, Logan Weber here with you. Producer for tonight's show, Julio Sanchez, our typical Thursday night crew here on your home for Kansas City sports. Just because the Royals aren't playing today doesn't mean there's a ton of Royals stuff to get to. 2 weeks ago, everybody and their mother, myself included, were at the gates, pitchforks and torches, ready to run the Royals. I don't want to say the entire team necessarily, but, you know, the higher ups, that there were some answers that needed to be had. People were up in arms calling for jobs. And what do the Royals do? Oh, okay. June's over. We had a really bad month. We only won one game at home. Let's go 7-3 to begin the month of July. Sounds good for everybody. Royals completed a three-game sweep of the Pirates yesterday, so we've got a ton of Royals content to get to, including that. Jeff Passan with an article today talking about trade options and ideal fits for contending teams in Major League Baseball. Royals are mentioned in the article from Passan, but not in the way you'd hope. We also, I have to get it off my chest because I believe that there is a broad conspiracy occurring across Major League Baseball right now that is being thrown around. It is being led at the forefront by the manager of the New York Yankees to keep Mikel Garcia out of the All-Star game coming up later this week. And I think it's time that we start talking about it. Major League Baseball draft comes up next week. And plus, we've still got plenty of Kansas City Chiefs news to get to. Training camp is very quickly approaching here. And before we know it, the season is going to start. And namely, Xavier Worthy, who had some very pointed words that he said during an interview with Kay Adams on Up and Adams, including what we might see from the Chiefs offense this season. So that's all coming up over the next 3 hours. No guests lined up for tonight's show, so it's just going to be me, Julio, and you. Our text line number, 913-586-7965. Let's get into some Royals conversation here to begin the show. After a three-game sweep of the Pittsburgh Pirates, should the Royals have won this series? Absolutely. A sweep of this series was not outside the realm of possibility. In fact, it seemed more likely that they should sweep this series rather than get swept. But it was a welcome sight after the way that the Royals struggled in the month of June to take advantage the way that they did, to win it in the fashion that they did, and to do it in the fashion that the bats came to the fore in this series. I mean, the splits are insane for this Royals team. I've just, looking at it earlier today, kind of made my head spin a little bit. So you look at the Royals' batting numbers. In the month of April, Royals played 27 games in April. They hit, this is insane to me. In April, this team hit 10 home runs. In May, they hit 20 in 28 games. They hit 24 home runs in June. So they had their best home run hitting month in June somehow with 24 of them, even though they only hit 237 as a team. So far in July, they've hit 14 home runs in 9 games. Okay. For a team that has not had a month where they had more home runs than games played, they are now well on their way to eclipsing that mark, only less than 10 games into the month. And that's a big part of why I think this Royals team in the month of July thus far is 7-2. They've hit 14 home runs. They've driven in 42 RBIs. They're hitting .256 as a team with a .317 OBP, which, if it holds, would be their best on-base percentage month over month this entire season. And a lot of that can be attributed to what this Royals team has done. Specifically, I don't want to say this Royals team, there's a good deal, a few players for this Royals team that have really turned things back around here in the month of July. We saw Bobby Witt Jr. starting to find it again. The Bobby Witt Jr., the superstar that we're all accustomed to seeing towards the middle and late part of June. And then to begin the month of July here, he's Bobby Witt Jr. right now. He's hitting .400, 2 home runs, 7 RBIs across 9 games played. He's got 10 runs so far this month. You look at Vinny Pasquantino hitting .306 this month. He continues to be outstanding. And how about Salvador Perez? Remember whenever, you know, it doesn't feel like long ago, and I'm sure there's still people out there that are saying that okay, we need to think about ways to move on from Salvi. Maybe Salvi's done. People throwing dirt on Salvador Perez's grave, quote unquote, that, okay, this might be the year that Salvi is done. Well, so far in July, he's hitting 371. He's hit four home runs, including two last night. He hit three in the series against Pittsburgh. Guy hit almost 900 feet worth of home runs last night. I mean, he was hitting moonshots. And you want to talk about moonshots. Cags going 466 last night.
That was ridiculous.
I don't know if I've ever seen a baseball hit that far outside of Kauffman State to dead center field. It cleared the second wall in center field at Kauffman. I mean, it's unreal where that baseball got hit last night. I've never seen a ball get hit that far in game, to at least to dead center field before. I mean, I've seen some ones get absolutely crushed out to left center or right center, hugging the foul poles, but I've never seen one go to dead center field that was hit the way that that one was. Almost 111 off the bat. That's what you hope from Jack Caglione. It has been a remarkably slow start for Jack Caglione in Kansas City. But he's finally got his first home run at Kauffman Stadium, so that monkey's off the back. He turns around the next day, hits his second home run out of Kauffman Stadium. So is now the time where we start to see him find his footing a little bit more? Nick Lofton has struggled since he got called up, but he had a remarkable game one of that series against game two against Pittsburgh, including the walk-off and the home run. I'm really hoping that this is the turnaround that those guys need, and that this isn't just a flash in the pan for Salvador Perez. This is him finding his footing here a little bit again, because this isn't an unprecedented thing for Salvador Perez to have a slow start to the year and really start to find himself again in June, July, August, and become the captain once again.
Do you think with Cags kind of heating up a little bit, right? Is it a bit of a coincidence or maybe some correlation there between the rest of the lineup and the core players, right? Starting to warm up and heat up. It takes some of the pressure off of him as well.
I think Salvi heating up certainly adds something to that, right? Because when you look at the way that Bobby Witt Jr. is playing right now, and then you've got Vinny hitting behind him, who has been one of the best first basemen in all of baseball, in Major League Baseball, since I would say May 1st, right? He wins American League Player of the Month in May. He had a pretty good month of June. He's off to a great start here in the month of July. When he's hitting behind Bobby, it makes it a little bit harder to pitch around Bobby Witt Jr. And then you look at the way that Salvi's hitting the baseball right now, makes it a little bit harder to pitch around Salvi. When you look at the way that Mikel Garcia has played this season, should be an all-star, isn't, we'll get into that later, makes it a little bit harder to pitch around him. And then I think all of that, yes, I agree with you. It all trickles down to helping Jack Caglione a little bit more, because the guys hitting above him in the lineup are becoming increasingly more difficult to pitch around, but you almost have to pitch around them because the guy hitting behind them is becoming such a dangerous hitter right now. I think Cags is seeing some better pitching than maybe he was previously. And I think that, you know, the outside noise is good and bad, right? I mean, we as members of the media and the fan base, it's never a good thing necessarily when players start to hear that outside noise come into the clubhouse. But also, right, I think that it adds a sense of urgency. And not that these guys needed a sense of urgency necessarily, because they're pro baseball players. They were in the middle of a rough stretch. They went from becoming a team that you thought could be a wild card team to people are talking about firing the manager and the hitting coach, right? Not that I've ever been a proponent of firing Matt Quatrero. Always felt that that was completely out of touch with reality after he just took you to the postseason for the first time in a decade. Yeah. But some of the calls I didn't think were that outside the realm of possibility or were that insane to say out loud. So when that outside noise comes in, you pair that with what this organization was already dealing with and how the players already knew about the struggles and knew they had to write this. I don't know if it added a little bit of a chip on the shoulder or what have you, but it became this kind of perfect storm, I think, for the Royals in a sense that the fans were unhappy, the players were unhappy, something had to be done, and something was done. I don't know what it was, right? Baseball is a fickle beast, as are all sports. And I want some scientist someday, it probably won't occur in our lifetime, Julio, but somebody has to eventually tell me what it is about Major League Baseball and the sport of baseball as a whole that we seem to live and die with each individual result over 162 games to a level that I don't really see in the NFL or in the NBA. I mean, the NFL is a 17-game season, and your team loses a game, and obviously it sucks and it hurts, but I don't see people panic when an NFL team loses one game the way that I see people panic after a Major League Baseball team loses game 40 out of 162 and everybody acts like the sky is falling. I want to know what it is about this sport that causes people to panic so, and that includes me. That includes everybody who watches baseball, that we live and die with one result out of 162 for some reason.
Well, I mean, it's for sure a game of ebbs and flows. That being said, you kind of led right into my next kind of look. We're in the 10th. We're on day 10 of the month here. So while they've had a good stretch, right?
Mm-hmm.
They had a long stretch of not producing. So it's all about consistency. Are they going to be able to keep this up for another couple weeks? Are they just going to be toying with our emotions like they do? And
right.
We're going to get a good solid 2 weeks and then they're going to, you know, regress. So, I mean, that's the story of baseball, right? I mean, and that's why fans can be fans, because we can be wishy-washy with how we feel from day to day. That's our privilege, you know, but we'll see. I think time will tell. While I am enjoying where they're at right now, you know, part of me also knows like the other shoe's going to drop and they're going to have another down, you know, another streak of just ugly baseball.
Right.
That's just part of it.
That's inevitable.
Yeah, it's
going to
happen.
Right. I mean, 46 and 48. So you've played 92 games already, or 94 games already. You still have 60 plus games left at this point, right? There is going to be another stretch of the Royals losing 6 out of 8. As long as they can avoid what happened in June, I think
those long stretches,
if you can avoid getting swept in back-to-back series, if you can avoid going a month nearly accomplishing something that hadn't been done in 60 years, which is losing every single home game in a calendar month of baseball. If you can avoid that, I think that this Royals team can be okay.
Win the games you're supposed to win, lose the games you're supposed to lose, and it will work itself out. You can't lose games against the White Sox
or
the A's. Like, those are things that just can't happen if you're going to be a competitive team.
So they're sitting now at 46 and 48. They're back up to second place in the American League Central, with the Detroit Tigers being the Detroit Tigers. They have been, let's face it, the best team in baseball this year. They're 59 and 35, which is the best record in the league. But, you know, sitting at 46 and 48, they are pretty much an identical baseball team on the road versus at Kauffman. This 10-game stretch for the Royals has been the best they've played at Kauffman Stadium the entire season, which is a great sign for this Royals baseball team. They're only 3 games out of a wild card spot right now, which is insane to think about.
But that's what scares me, right? We were just talking about that. It's toying with my emotions. Like, this is when teams make terrible decisions, when they go for it, when they're not really in the hunt. And even if you are, like, what is that postseason really going to look like for you? Are you really going to be successful and start chasing something that maybe we shouldn't?
And that's where I think there are some Royals fans who I think have been delusional. Feels like the wrong word. That feels like the wrong word.
A little strong.
Yeah, I understand that's fandom, right? People believe that their team can accomplish things that maybe are a little bit far greater than themselves, right? I want to say that there are some Royals fans who have been, let's go with disingenuous, about this Royals baseball team, about the caliber of talent and where this team could go. I came into this year saying that this Royals baseball team is the 2024 Royals. That's where this team could go. I came into the year saying an 86 win baseball team, replicating what you did in 24. That's a win for this Royals baseball team, because there were certain aspects of last year's team that I didn't think were sustainable for this year's team. The crazy part is that those things that I thought were unsustainable have come right back into the fore again. Seth Lugo is pitching like a Cy Young candidate again in the American League. Didn't see it coming. The guy's got a sub-1.5 ERA over his last 8 starts. I didn't see a 2.67 ERA going into the All-Star break for Seth Lugo again. I didn't see Michael Wacha being a guy hovering around a 3 ERA again this year. I was wrong.
We both were. We both had that conversation coming into the season
absolutely
several
times.
Did.
We talked about Salvador Perez in the year that he had last year. Could he replicate it? So far this year, no, he hasn't. He hasn't been able to continue that. Bobby Witt Jr., he's been great. I'm not going to sit here and denigrate Bobby Witt Jr. The guy's an all-star, rightfully so. I still believe all around he's a top 3 player in baseball. And while I do believe that Jacob Wilson was deserving of being the American League starting shortstop, I know I'm going to catch heat for saying that. Bobby Witt Jr. is the best shortstop in baseball. But let's face it, Bobby Witt Jr. hasn't been as good as he was a year ago. There have been aspects of this Royals team that I didn't think would stick around from a year ago that have. And this year has felt so strange to me because things that happened last year that I didn't think would happen this year are still happening, and you're seeing guys that you didn't see coming having great years. Mikel Garcia is hitting over 300. Vinny Pasquantino's come back off the hand injury and been great. He was the American League Player of the Month. Chris Bubich is an AL All-Star as a pitcher. Carlos Estevez is second in Major League Baseball in saves. I can't say I saw any of those things happening. And somehow this team is 2 games below 500.
Yeah, but that can be easily explained, though, right? Coming into the season, our insider, Josh Vernier, right? Coming into the season, he said, in order for this team to be successful, the cornerstone pieces have to be successful. And quite honestly, again, it's all relative, right? But you look at Bobby Witt Jr., his terrible is a different type of terrible, right? It's not a normal player's terrible.
Right.
But it's not the level that we're used to seeing like last year. So just Salvador Perez, you know, struggling. The cornerstone pieces just weren't carrying the offense the way that we would have hoped.
No question. No question. And that is reciprocated in the biggest boon for this Royals team last year, because they didn't hit the ball well last year as a team. But for some reason, last year's Royals baseball team was at its best in the batter's box with a runner on second and third. They were one of the best teams in baseball with runners in scoring position. And this year, we're seeing a return, a regression to the mean. We're seeing a stat line that makes a lot more sense for a team that doesn't hit the baseball extremely well. They don't hit the ball well with runners in scoring position. They did last year for some unknown reason, and it was a strange thing to watch. This year, that stat line makes much more sense, and that is why this Royals baseball team is where it is. Anybody, in my view, I understand the fandom and I understand the desire, but I don't think there is anybody that should have thought reasonably that this Royals baseball team was going to win 90 games. Was going to win 92 games, was going to compete for a division title in the American League Central, was going to somehow push for the AL crown to go to a World Series. I didn't think this year's Royals baseball team. 46-48, you got 3 games before the All-Star break, right? You've got the Mets coming up for 3 games starting tomorrow, which we'll get into. I think that 46-48.
It's about where we thought.
That makes sense
baseball.
To me. It makes sense to me. I hate to be the one to say that. It makes sense to me. And where the Royals go from here is going to be extremely interesting because they are right in that gray area of do you buy in and go for it, which to me doesn't make sense. Do you sell and try to plan for your future, which again, to me, doesn't make sense. You're just kind of caught between a rock and a hard place right now if you're the Kansas City Royals, where I don't know which direction you go. I don't think either direction makes sense.
I think we do know, right? Sample size wise, again, if we're talking an entire half of a season for baseball, and if this 10-day, 14-day run of good baseball is going to make your decision, I mean, it really shouldn't, right? I mean, we know what we're getting. We're halfway through the season.
No question. 913-586-7965 is our number. Royals conversation continues here right after this. You're listening to After Hours. Logan Weber alongside Julio Sanchez on 96.5 The Fan, your home for Kansas City sports.
You're listening to After Hours, brought to you by Twin Peaks. Eats, drinks, scenic views on your home for Kansas City sports. 96.5, The Fan.
After a three-game sweep of the Pirates, Kansas City has now won 7 of its last 10. They're only 2 games below 500. With 3 games coming up against the Mets before the All-Star break, there is a world that exists out there. I don't know how plausible it is. If the Royals continue to play great baseball, they could possibly be above 500 going into the All-Star break, which would be insane. After the way that
after all of that to still be able to be over 500.
After the way things looked at the end of June, when we all, you know, all of our hair, you know, heads were on fire talking about this Royals baseball team, and they would somehow be sitting above 500 going into the All-Star break. That would be what a wild world that would be living. After Hours here on 96.5, The Fan, Logan Weber alongside Julio Sanchez. And, you know, there's a lot of conversation about this Royals baseball team. Some of it I agree with, some of it I don't. And I decided this week that I was going to like really dive into some numbers here, because one thing that I keep hearing get talked about is Jonathan India. Jonathan India this, Jonathan India that, right? After the offseason trade, Brady Singer going to Cincinnati, India coming over to Kansas City to try to fill that leadoff spot role that this Royals team has so desperately needed. And there are some who believe that Jonathan India has not been that answer. He has not been good enough as the Royals leadoff hitter. And while maybe he hasn't been good enough, he's been better. And the numbers back that up. I mean, you just look at the numbers. So last year in 2024, right, Royals were the worst team in baseball at the leadoff spot. As a team, Kansas City hit .228 in the number one spot in the lineup. Mikel Garcia hit .234 as the Royals leadoff hitter in over 430 ABs. He had a .280 on base percentage. Tommy Pham had over 100 at-bats hitting leadoff. He hit .228 with a .250 on base. Michael Massey hit .234. Adam Frazier hit .213. So far this year, hitting leadoff, while it's not elite by any stretch of the imagination, Jonathan India is hitting .244 with a .328 on base percentage. So, his batting average is 16 points higher than Mikel Garcia's was last year. His on-base percentage is nearly 50 points higher than Mikel Garcia's was last year, hitting leadoff. What this move has also done is allow Mikel Garcia to slide further down the lineup out of the leadoff spot, where he has emerged as one of the best contact-hitting third basemen in baseball. I think this has been a great move for the Kansas City Royals. Has it equated itself into a ton of wins? No. And it's fascinating because, folks, Jonathan India gets on base. The dude gets on base. In April, he hit .186. He had a bad month of April, a really bad month. But his on-base percentage was still a .297. In May, he hit .266 with a .343 on base. He hit .260 in June. So his contact numbers are getting better. So far this month in July, he's regressed a little bit. He's only hitting .212 so far here in the month of July. He's got an on-base percentage of .366. He's getting on base over a third of the time that he arrives at the dish for a plate appearance. That is what Jonathan India is doing right now. In 33 at-bats here in July, he's got 7 hits, 5 walks. He's been hit by a pitch 3 times, so I don't really understand how that makes any sense. Strikeout numbers are a bit dismal here in July. He struck out 14 times in those 33 ABs. He struck out 19 times in April in 86. So the strikeout numbers up, yes. But somehow the guy is getting on base at a clip that he wasn't even doing in April, May, and June. Jonathan India is not and is never going to be a guy who hits 270, 280 or better as a leadoff hitter. His career numbers when he got to Kansas City should have shown you that. He's a career 250 hitter, career 240 hitter for that matter. Yeah, I take that back. Career 250. His on-base percentage is what the Royals looked at when they brought him in. He's got a career on-base at 350. Has that been the case this year? No. His on-base percentage is at a 330. But a lot of that is because of his struggles in the month of April and how difficult it's been for him to overcome that as we've gone along. So far here in May and in June and in July, he is much closer to his career averages of a on-base percentage hovering up over 350. That is what the Royals wanted in Jonathan India. He has been a better leadoff hitter than any leadoff hitter the Royals had last year. That's been a win. And to add on to that win, Mikel Garcia has been allowed to have that pressure taken off of himself and has been allowed to flourish as this team's three-hole hitter, five-hole hitter, or any other spot that they've put him in the lineup this year, including in limited ABs. The guy's actually been really good as a leadoff hitter, surprisingly. In 34 at-bats, Mikel Garcia is hitting .412 with a .432 on-base percentage as a leadoff hitter. Does that mean I think he should go to leadoff? Absolutely not, because that's what happened last year. They moved him to the leadoff spot, and he completely fell off a cliff. Jonathan India has been what this Royals team wanted going into the year. It's helped them in the leadoff spot. It's helped Mikel Garcia. It's made it a more well-rounded offense. Problem is they can't hit with runners in scoring position, and I don't know how to fix that. 913-586-7965 is our number. Speaking of Mikel Garcia, I gotta talk it through. I have to talk it out because I think that Aaron Boone is absolutely creating some sort of conspiracy to keep Mikel Garcia out of the All-Star game, and I, for one, will not stand for it. We'll talk about that next right here on After Hours on 96.5 The Fan. There needs to be an investigation. Somebody's got to get to the bottom of this. So you're telling me that the American League All-Star rosters are announced, right? Jose Ramirez, starter at third base. Nobody's going to argue with that. He's the best third baseman in baseball. Makes perfect sense. Okay, Alex Bregman's the other. Hey, had a great year, but the guy hasn't played since May. Oh, okay, so you're going to have to find a replacement for Alex Bregman. Okay, let's do it, right? Who's going to be the replacement for Alex Bregman? Junior Caminero, okay. I mean, he's only hitting .250, but he's got 22 home runs. He's got 58 RBIs. He's got an OPS that's hovering around 800. Still think Mikel Garcia is more deserving, but I digress. Maybe it's just bias on my part. Maybe I'm just a homer. Maybe I'm just, you know, I can't get my Royals fandom out of my brain. All right. Well, okay, now Jose Ramirez isn't participating in the All-Star game. So where do we go? Who's the replacement for him? Oh, Isak Paredes? Okay, he's hitting .255. He's only got 19 home runs and 49 RBI, so he doesn't even have the home runs and the RBIs that Caminero has. So what sense does that make? That's okay. So now we've got four third basemen in the All-Star game for the American League with... Now you had Jose Ramirez, he's out, replaced by Caminero. So those are, I take that back, you've got more than four. Those are two. Bregman, injury, hasn't played since May, he's out. Isak Paredes is in. All right, I still don't get it. Jazz Chisholm makes the All-Star game. Typical, big market New York, that's the way it goes. The guy is worse than Mikel Garcia in every statistical category besides OPS, where he is he's literally 0.004 of a point higher in OPS, and he's got more home runs. More home runs, but less RBIs. He's played 30 less games than Mikel Garcia. So there's something that comes to mind, that whole best ability is availability sort of thing. Jazz Chisholm is hurt. So, well, but yeah, let's go ahead and throw him into the All-Star game, because why not? This is what we do, right? Okay. Now you have Zach McKinstry replacing Jeremy Pena a shortstop. So, Jose Ramirez, Isak Paredes, Junior Caminero, Zach McKinstry, Alex Bregman, Jazz Chisholm. Six third basemen have been picked and selected for the American League All-Star Game, and somehow none of those six are Mikel Garcia, who is in the top 10 in baseball in doubles, in batting average, and in hits. He's in the top 20 of Major League Baseball in strikeout percentage. One of the best in baseball at limiting strikeouts. And yet we can't get Mikel Garcia into the All-Star game. These three guys, Paredes, Caminero, and McKinstry, have all been selected after the voting occurred as replacement players. Well, who selects the replacement players? Oh, that's right. It's the manager for that league's team. Well, who's the manager for that league's team? It's the manager of whichever team won the American League and the National League the previous year. So it's Aaron Boone of the New York Yankees. Well, who had a tete-a-tete with the New York Yankees last year? Oh, that would be Mikel Garcia. He and Jazz Chisholm don't get along. There was that weird tag in the postseason last year. There was the weird tag at third base in that series against the Yankees that the Royals had earlier, you know, earlier this year. I'm telling you, Aaron Boone is deliberately keeping Mikel Garcia out of the All-Star game. That's what this feels like right now. And I cannot in my own brain say that I'm speaking out of turn when I say that.
Yeah, I mean, you're 100% correct. I can't point to anything else other than what you've just laid out. Only thing I could say is, right, we know it's a popularity contest. Sample size wise, while these nominations should, it should be right what they've done up to this point in the season. We know that's not the case, right? We know the All-Star game more or less tends to be a popularity contest, and it's more of a longevity thing. Like, have you done it longer than half a season? Unfortunately, Mikel Garcia has only done it for half a season. Next year, you know, I don't think that would be the case if he can continue to play consistently the rest of this season and the next half of the first half of next season, he's earned it. But right now, I mean, again, consistency wise, you got to do it for more than half a season. Unfortunately, that's just how it works.
I
don't disagree with you. Everything you've laid out, I mean, he's earned it.
He's got the best batting average of any third baseman in baseball. Not just the American League, in Major League Baseball, with a .305. He's got more doubles than any third baseman in baseball. He's got the second most triples of any third baseman in the American League. Zach McKinstry is the only guy that has more. I can't. He's played in more games than any third baseman in the American League this year. He's played in 92 games for this Royals team out of 94. So the guy is consistently on the field. There's something to be said for that. 338 at-bats, which is the second most in the American League among qualified third basemen. Junior Caminero is the only guy that has more. He's got the second best on-base percentage of any qualified third baseman in the American League. Jose Ramirez, the only guy that has it better. He's struck out 50 times in 338 at-bats. The only guys with better strikeout ratios than Mikel Garcia at third base in the American League, Jose Ramirez and Ernie Clement. And Zach McKinstry has struck out 70 times this year. Isak Paredes has struck out 65 times. Caminero has struck out 71 times. It all comes down to me. This all comes down to Aaron Boone being the American League manager in the All-Star game. And number two, it's, you know the adage, you know, that typical cliche of chicks dig the long ball. Well, apparently dudes dig the long ball too, because that's what this is, right? Paredes and Caminero get into the All-Star game ahead of Mikel Garcia because they hit home runs. McKinstry is one that absolutely makes no sense to me. Zach McKinstry is beating Mikel Garcia in quite literally one statistical category, and that's triples. Mikel has a better batting average. He's got more doubles. He's got more home runs. He's got more RBIs. They have drawn the same number of walks. Mikel has struck out 20 less times. He's got more stolen bases, a better on-base percentage. He's slightly lower than him in slugging percentage, I guess. But they have the same WAR, and Mikel Garcia has a better OPS. You replaced a shortstop in the American League with a third baseman, and you picked Zach McKinstry instead of Mikel Garcia. It's BS to me.
It is, and it gives you even more of a reason, if you didn't already hate the Yankees, to hate them even more. I'd say a bit of a rivalry, but I think it's a one-sided rivalry. But I think also, right, it's hard to choose. We got two All-Stars in, right? Are you really going to get three All-Stars from a sub-500 team? You know, probably I think not. That plays a part in it as well of you know, what is your team look like at this point in the season? Like, does a sub-500 team deserve three All-Stars?
That's a fair point that you raise. The crazy thing is, in my opinion, this is a sub-500 baseball team that deserves four.
Well, I can't argue with you there.
I look at a guy who is currently tied for second in baseball in saves, tied for first in the American League, and Carlos Estevez.
That's the bigger snub.
Yeah,
quite
him
honestly.
And Josh Hader have the same amount of saves. Robert Suarez of the Padres is the only guy with more. He's got one more than Hader and Estevez do. Hader has a 2.38 ERA. Estevez a 2.03 ERA. So Carlos Estevez, same number of saves, but has a better ERA. Hader's the All-Star. Doesn't make a lot of sense to me. Second, you know, the guy behind them in terms of saves in the American League, Jeff Hoffman with 22. I mean, come on. I mean, I'm looking at this with guys with qualified pitchers with 16 or more saves this year. There are, as I'm looking at this list, there are 15 guys that have 16 or more saves in baseball this year. Only two of those 16 have a better ERA than Carlos Estevez. Andre Munoz of the Seattle Mariners, who's got 21 saves and a 106 ERA. Phenomenal. And Edwin Diaz of the New York Mets, 18 saves, a 1.75 ERA. So what are we doing here? I get it. It's a sub-500 baseball team. I understand, right? To the winner go the spoils, sort of a thing. But I have been on my soapbox for weeks about how I believe Major League Baseball has got to do something about its All-Star game voting. Because I understand the Royals are 46-48. I get it that they're a team that is below 500 going into the All-Star break. But Carlos Estevez is having the kind of year that not only puts him into the conversation for an All-Star, he's in the running for reliever of the year in baseball right now. And he's not an All-Star? Mikel Garcia is in a battle for a silver slugger at the third base position, but he's not an All-Star? That's wrong. That's something that's wrong with Major League Baseball, that you've got guys in positions like that that are not just that the All-Star game is an afterthought for them. They're looking to take home hardware at the end of this year. That's the trajectory that they are on at the moment. But yet they can't get into the All-Star game because it's become nothing but a popularity contest and a manager in that league getting to pick and choose which players he likes and dislikes to decide who gets in and who doesn't get in. It's wrong. It's absolutely wrong. It's corrupt at the ultimate level with the All-Star game voting in Major League Baseball. Just like everything that involves voting in Major League Baseball. Don't even get me started. The Baseball Hall of Fame is also a complete and utter joke, but I'm not getting into that tonight. 913-586-7965 is our number. Pure disrespect, Mikel is a dog. Yeah, he is. Aaron Boone is Billy Martin 2.0, sniveling Yankees trash. Well, I mean, he comes by it honestly, right? Boone is a Yankees guy through and through. Long before he got the job as the manager. So I guess I get it. I got a crazy trade suggestion here in the text line that I want to take a look at. We'll talk about that on the other side here as we wrap up hour number one of After Hours. Logan Weber alongside producer Julio Sanchez, your home for Kansas City Sports, 96.5 The Fan. Okay, I thought I was done. I'm not done.
Don't get down from that soapbox just yet.
Not yet, I guess. I'm on the brink of needing an urgent care.
I like it.
I'm on the verge of needing a hospital ER, I think. Did Jazz Chisholm become a superstar overnight and I was made unaware? So the guy makes the All-Star game ahead of Mikel Garcia. BS to the utmost degree. And now I'm looking at a Twitter feed that is telling me that this man's been selected for the Home Run Derby?
That's correct.
One of eight participants in the Major League Baseball Home Run Derby. The guy who's tied for the 28th most home runs in baseball is in the Home Run Derby alongside Ronald Acuna Jr., Cal Raleigh, who is hitting home runs at a pace never before seen by a catcher, James Wood, Byron Buxton, O'Neill Cruz, Junior Caminero, Brent Rooker, and now Jazz Chisholm. Oh my God. It used to mean something. The Home Run Derby used to mean something when Pete Alonso would show up every year and do his thing. When Josh Hamilton had that remarkable Home Run Derby performance all those years ago, the Home Run Derby used to have reverence to it. Now we're just throwing a guy in there because he's wearing pinstripes? That's baseball now?
Yep, that's correct.
It's just big market now? Yeah, no Aaron Judge. No Shohei. Eugenio Suarez isn't in the Home Run Derby, right? Schwarber's not in the Home Run Derby. Saya Suzuki, another guy who got absolutely hosed out of an All-Star game. The guy who it leads Major League Baseball in RBIs right now, alongside Aaron Judge, doesn't make the All-Star game. Not in the Home Run Derby either. But no, but Jazz Chisholm's in the Home Run Derby. Yep. Makes sense, baseball. Let's do it. Riley Green, who's having an absolutely remarkable season in Detroit, his coming out party, 22 long balls this year. In the All-Star game? Absolutely not. Pete Crow Armstrong.
Why? Who would just, you?
Pete Crow Armstrong, who just hit 25 homers, 25 steals today, right before the All-Star break? Nope. Not in the Home Run Derby. But Jazz Chisholm's in the Home Run Derby. Fix it. Rob, I'm begging you, dude, do something in that office. All right. Enough. I need a break before the aneurysm bursts. 913-586-7965 is our number. More Royals conversation coming up, as well as some Kansas City Chiefs news and notes to get to. You're listening to After Hours here on 96.5 The Fan. Logan Weber alongside Julio Sanchez, your home for Kansas City sports.
You're listening to After Hours, brought to you by Twin Peaks. Eats, drinks, scenic views on your home for Kansas City sports. 96.5 The Fan.